morning. Today is Halloween morning.
Scary already.
Yeah. Joining us this morning is Estelle. We saw a car Monday that was parked in somebody's driveway and had a skeleton in the passenger seat.
Oh, my God.
Some of these realish lookings that the craft stores have got now are a little goofy.
Oh.
So, in keeping with today, how did Halloween come to be called Halloween?
Okay, it's got something to do with All Hallows' Eve.
Yeah.
And that has something to do with the transition of the light and the memorializing the dead and all those kind of things. Is that right?
Not sure that's exactly the way the church calls it, but we'll, here we go. The old Celtic calendar began on November 1st, and therefore October 31st was New Year's Eve, the night on which witches and hobgoblins rode about for the last fling. With the introduction of Christianity, the old New Year's Day became All Saints' Day.
That's right.
And the evening before became All Saints' Eve, or All Hallows' Eve. Though the name was changed, the customs and the belief that witches rode on this night persisted and have come down to this day.
Well, now, speaking about the Celtic...
Oh, I thought you were going to say witches, but okay, nah, good.
Speaking about the witches, too. It's really interesting. Here we have all the trick-or-treating and everything like that, but in Ireland and possibly other parts of the Isles, they had different traditions, like there was bobbing for apples, those kind of things. So
we do that for school carnivals around here.
Yeah.
Not particularly successfully, however.
Yeah. But anyway, those are the kind of things. But yeah. Yeah, I've noticed quite a few scary yards out there. There's a lot of skeletons hanging around.
Yeah, it's Halloween seems to be
scary.
Like it's something that adults are getting more engaged with. Mm-hmm. You know, as the kids are now going to the neighborhood gatherings and the church gatherings and that kind of stuff instead of going door to door as much.
Yeah,
Parents are
I'll
using
be going
it
to a gathering thing
for
today.
Parties and that kind of stuff. Yeah.
Yeah. But I don't think I'm going to dress up.
No. I'm hoping just to drive safely.
Yeah, watch out for all those monsters and goblins and everything else running around.
Have no situations to deal with. Yeah. Oh, geez. So, what do you think about this election cycle? You're on the outside looking in.
Yeah, which is kind of fun.
You do have vested interest.
Of course.
In a couple of them. Is this more aggressive this time around, or what read do you have on this?
Well, I think it's kind of as I'm looking at specifically at Eureka and Arcata as well, actually, wherever there are personalities involved, let's put it that way, there does seem to be quite a battle going on, and I think that that's just an indication that things are changing up. And people want to be part of it. There are problems that have been identified for quite some time now. People are saying we want to address it this way versus that way. So I think that this time around, I'm super interested in how it comes about. And then, of course, we have measures, too, both statewide and local, that are really, really important for the future of our county.
It'll be interesting to see how six comes.
Yeah, six is an interesting one. Six, I think, started out of the gate pretty strong, but there's been a big pushback all across the state, it seems to me. And
I would figure some of your buddies in the more populated areas would probably have a better read
some of the state
propositions are going.
And as I've said before, you know, the California State Association of Counties, RCRC, the Rural Representatives of California, have all come out and said, you know, Proposition 6 will not work for us. So you see those signs on the highway. Generally speaking, it seems that the pushback has been pretty strong. So I'm hopeful that we can defeat Proposition 6. It was kind of interesting. Normally when I get calls, you know, for endorsement or whatever, I got a statewide, probably like one of those. It wasn't a robocall. There was a person there. It was a polling thing, asking me to support Proposition 6. And I could easily say, listen, as a supervisor, and I could easily say, guess what? Our board passed a resolution against Proposition 6, so you're not going to be getting my endorsement. It's not always that easy to just say no.
But it is kind of cool to be able to use the title.
Yeah, right, yeah. Right. That's it. We can't do it. But yeah, but this is a very, very interesting election cycle. Obviously, on a nationwide level, I can't even imagine what it's like for people running for Congress or Senate right now. There's a lot of tension around that.
I suppose to a certain extent it's healthy.
Oh, yes.
That people are paying attention. Mm-hmm. You know, even here, in June, we had how many unopposed?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Or,
that's right.
You know, you just kind of scratch your head and go, well, okay. So does that mean people don't care? Or in these situations, does it mean that people care a little bit more and be activated? The ones that are curious to me are the get out and vote.
Yeah.
Because now those are being paid for instead of as PSAs or, mm-hmm. or things that the broadcaster, I suppose the print medium has the equivalent of that, mm-hmm. just as... Hey, let's just get the turnout up mm-hmm. high enough so that we get a little bit more input rather than having 15 or 20% of the total population dictating who or what is approved. We bump that up a little bit.
And that is definitely one of the issues with the midterms, obviously on the national level, but that general cycle, the non-presidential years tends to have a much lower turnout. Now, Humboldt's pretty good. We do get involved in local politics pretty actively, but I would say this year even more.
Still be nice to get it up a little bit.
Yeah. I couldn't agree more with you, Ryan. I mean, it's just really good to get that conversation.
Well, that'll be the kiss of death for you in 2 years.
Yeah, 2 years from now. 2 years
she
from now.
She agreed with him. Okay, he's gone.
Oh, no.
It's 8:19.
Listen to 980 AM for the best music, ABBA, Neil Diamond, Barbara Streisand, Billy Joel, and the Fifth Dimension. The all-time best are heard every day, all day long on 980 AM. We are easy radio, easy on your ears and easy on your mind. This is memory-making music and you'll love the memories you create. Tune in and hear the best music, easy radio, 980 AM.
Good morning, KINS, News and Information Time. It's 8:24. We're back to Talk Shop this morning with Estelle. The Open Door Clinic in Fortuna.
Yeah.
The Grand Palace is now open. It's kind of interesting for me. I don't know what the outcome will be.
Mm-hmm.
Plus 10 years.
Yeah.
But I suspect that all of a sudden the Ronerville area in Fortuna is going to see a re-energizing in a makeover of what that area is, supporting the staff, the restaurants mm-hmm. will pop up, that kind mm-hmm. of stuff, as well as the folks using the clinic also. Yeah. How do you read that one?
I think this is actually a very, very positive thing for both for Fortuna and the River Valley in general. It's was very exciting to be there last week for the opening. What was really interesting to me, because, things take a long time, generally speaking, but it seemed like a flash from when we put the shovels in the dirt to going out and doing a tour last year, actually, with Herman Spetzler, not long before
when
he passed.
The studs were in place, and you could kind of see
exactly.
What was going
on. There were scaffolds out there, etc., and having an idea of what is this going to look like, and then being there just very shortly thereafter, and a completed clinic already up and working. What I like about it is the collegial atmosphere with Redwood, as well as the hospital, St. Joseph's. I like the fact that everybody's on board, that this is a good move in the right right direction. There's more communication happening between them, and I think there's also going to be more collaboration for other services in the future. So generally speaking, I think this is really, really good. And I think that to give them a lot of credit, I would say Open Door was very good about how they approached this. They provided bus tours to the other Open Door clinics so people from Fortuna could get an idea of what it was about. The services will be excellent. They're already attracting more medical people, which means
that's one of the biggie challenges mm-hmm. is staffing
it, and Fortuna does pretty well in terms of housing, so generally speaking all of that is also a good economic driver for the community. And I like your idea of those kinds of things like cafes that serve the staff at a busy location, so they're not very far away from Redwood Memorial, and then they've got other things in the works, too.
The neighborhood will change a little bit. Yeah.
It will. And I think it was kind of fun because the last few times I was there, it hadn't been finished out in all of its glory. As you said, it really is beautiful. It's probably the biggest one around. Just coming down Ronerville and saying, oh, my God, there it says Open Door right there. Actually really, really nice. And the view, the way it was designed, I was talking to somebody at the opening, you know, there are always challenges. The next one that Open Door is going to do is in Arcata, and I was talking with Alex Stillman.
Go back to the main.
Yeah, right.
Kind of, you bring it up, yeah.
Yeah, I was talking with Alex Stillman, and she said, well, we're going to have a much smaller footprint, and we'll have challenges there. But this one had challenges, too, because it was in a former grazing area, and they had to deal with the wetlands issues and all of that. But they did a beautiful job. But more importantly, I think it's going to be great for people in the community to have that clinic there.
How solid is the healthcare in the Garberville, the southern
part? It's tricky. You know, they definitely have challenges. The healthcare district, which owns the hospital, has been dealing for a long, long time with the concerns about seismic retrofit. They've been looking at moving the hospital, and that kind of comes and goes. They did put in a CT scanner, which is really good. They tend to be, the hospital tends to deal a lot with stabilizing people and sending them on somewhere else, which is a very important function based on the fact that they're right in between. I mean, they're right in along Highway 101. And then you have the long-term care facility for people, which is also really important. So it definitely fulfills a function. And then you've got the Redwoods Rural Health Center that are stepping up as well. So kudos to the people involved with that. The CT scanner, I think, is going to be really, really good also for people that need that. Is it a CAT scan or a CT scanner? I never know the difference. But anyway, it's a big thing that they just put right next to the emergency room. But again, excuse me, they did try raising funds, and that was rejected by the voters, speaking of the voters. And then they extended the original amount that property owners pay.
How the district is set up?
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah. But they did downsize a little bit. They released the Blocksburg area from it because people in Blocksburg were saying that they weren't really being served by it, and that could make some sense. So anyway, yeah, that's kind of a long answer. It's a struggle, for sure. It is just a struggle, and they got to keep going.
KINS News and Information Times, 8:30.
As a community to make Humboldt a better place to work and live? The answer is to make sure our kids are literate, able to plan financially, move forward in their education so they are better prepared to enter our workforce, and become contributing and productive members in our society, community, and economy. How do we do it? Through the Decade of Difference Initiative. Visit decadeofdifference.org and find out how you, as a parent, student, or business owner, can help. It's the Decade of Difference. Be part of it.
Good morning, KINS, News and Information Time. It's 8:35. We're back to Talk Shop this morning with Humboldt County Supervisor Estelle Fennell. Talk Shop presented by CDH Painting, REDEC, American Ag Credit, Humboldt Termite Pest Control, and Murphy's Markets. Estelle, economic development in our area, I've had a couple people ask. I was out of the neighborhood last week. So what's legalization done in the area? Well, you know, I know of a couple of situations where business is off 30% to 40%. Other places are kind of hanging in there. A couple are seeing a bit of an upswing. It's I was guessing that about 20% of the economy is now not here.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. What kind of read do you have after what 10 months? I guess 10 months into this.
I think we're really at a pivotal point now, Brian, because we're turning the corner at the state level. Suddenly, the state is beginning to license. In fact, they're, I think, one of the first licenses out there, a permanent license or at least a yearly annual license, went to Southern Humboldt. So Humboldt has been working very, very hard to make it possible for that transition into being a part of the economy. There's definitely challenges. You're absolutely right. We're feeling it throughout the county, only because there was an underground market that was very cash rich and plentiful, and that money was spread throughout the county, restaurants, car dealers, you name it. So people are, you know, I'm not sure what they're doing in terms of people who are not going into the system, but I'm sure they're watching their pennies more, and there'll be less of that kind of spending.
Now, do you guys see payroll tax figures?
Not
at this at the county. Does the state provide you any of that information?
We get kind of overall figures that go in, and that's something that our new economic developer will be definitely looking at.
I'm wondering what the first 6 months of the calendar year reflected after this has been put in play.
I don't know, but I could definitely find out. I think it's important to recognize also that the people who are becoming permitted and have all these dreams for, you know, successful businesses.
They're plantations.
Right. They're spending a lot of money to become compliant. So I think there's a general tightening of the purse strings a little bit in this transitional phase. What I do see is eventually that will equalize out. And we may not have that same looseness that we had when people were just cash rich, but we may have a more solid base. And I do think that Southern Humboldt will be seeing quite a significant change. I look at, for instance, Rio Dell opening up their facilities there near out on the outskirts of Rio Dell along Highway 101, which is a good location for it, and they see that as a good economic driver for their community. They may be doing better off than they've been doing for quite some time in terms of revenue there. But I do see all over an important phase. We have to work on the branding, and I would argue that county maybe needs to pay a little bit of a part in that. And second of all, we need to package that with tourism in some degree, and that is working as well. So in this transitional phase, we've all got challenges. It's interesting to me that some people had challenges in 2008 and a lot didn't in Humboldt County. We kind of floated right above that just because of that. But not everybody. You know what I'm saying?
I know what you're saying, sweetheart.
You know,
yeah.
And I have quite a few friends who were in the same situation as you were, Brian. But generally speaking, you know, the county was able to at least tread water at that time. Obviously, we had to lay off people at the county level, and now we're being able to hire them, especially at the sheriff's office with the Measure Z funding, all that. But honestly, this time around, we have an opportunity and a challenge, and so I hope it goes well.
With the state licensing,
mm-hmm.
is it going to be a statewide, and the counties aren't going to have the individual permitting processes that are all over the place and the licensing requirements? Is it going to be one across the entire state, or is it still going to be county by county by county with some kind of an override at the state level?
County by county. The way it was written up is more giving more local control, which can also be more local headaches, but it was certainly a headache for the state, because they had to figure out a way to allow for that local control at the same time as you have state oversight. So it took them a long time to get into the track and trace system, which is essentially what they really needed before they could issue these permits. So now that's
running. Kind of locked in?
That is locked in, and now they are beginning to give annual permits. Now, we, to give Humboldt County staff due credit, we recognize that because of the delays in permitting, there was no way that the state would be able to get people on annual licenses in time for the beginning of next year. So we actually did some work with other counties, and a bill was passed at the state level which allows for provisional licenses for people who are in the process. So that'll go for a year, but those licenses will look like an annual license and have a lot of the requirements of it. So it should be getting more focused as we go into 2019, and I do think that will make a huge difference. But I've talked with people now in the industry, and they're already seeing the benefits of being permitted. They're getting higher prices for their product than had been happening, and luckily, what I'm hearing, I don't know if it's true, but it's anecdotal, is that because of the stringent situation in Humboldt County, a lot of the product is coming out well under testing. So that's really important.
Did the state address anything with the transportation-related issues?
Oh, yeah, transportation's definitely an issue. Now, there was one thing. I was down in Davis for a meeting of the California Cannabis Authority, and Lori Ajax, who's the head of the California Bureau of Regulation, cannabis regulation, said that they got a lot of comments on their revamped regulations, and as a result, they're coming back with some changes. But one that they got a lot of input about was, can people distribute or transport in counties that say no? And the answer is they can. So that'll be disappointing to some counties.
Driving through?
Yeah, driving through. And I think that they can actually distribute medical, even if they, you know, there's no facilities there. So I'm not sure how that's going to work out, but that's going to be part of the final regulations, is that the state law requires that you can actually transport it through those counties.
KINS, News and Information Time, it's 8:42. We'll be back with more from Estelle.
SoCal just got a whole lot closer. No, we're not talking about some big, scary geological event. It's way cooler and with much less tectonic shifting. Starting in June, flying to LA will be quicker than ever with United Airlines' new nonstop flights from Humboldt County. That's right, no stops between here and there. Ascend, descend, and you're landing, like in just a couple hours. So it's kind of like LA is just down the road a piece. So what are you waiting for? Check it out at flyhumboldt.org.
Good morning, KINS, News and Information Time. It's 8:47. We're back to Talk Shop this morning with Estelle. One of the challenges, I suppose, when there's full legitimate banking will be taken care of. That, to me, is the linchpin, obviously.
Thank you for saying that, because that's what I'm involved in, is the California Cannabis Authority. And we are definitely looking to try to make it possible for financial institutions to deal with the cannabis industry.
Now, if it's state-chartered...
Mm-hmm.
It would seem like that would be pretty easy, but most of the folks are FDIC.
Yes.
And the F is not for the C.
No.
Federal is federal.
Yeah.
And that's a whole different,
yes, it is.
Different challenge.
Yeah.
So are you going to nibble for the state licensed financial institutions, whether they're credit unions or maybe just a state bank that doesn't opt into the federal insurance programs. Mm-hmm. Is that the first nibble on this?
Obviously, that would be the first nibble, but I think that the key here is that under federal law, you can actually bank and pay taxes on that industry, but there are huge amount of oversight. So that's one of the issues that people who were willing to bank.
So compliance costs would be really significant.
Yeah. Yeah, so okay. They would. And in fact, with credit unions that have done business with cannabis businesses, the overhead is huge, absolutely huge. So if you have a state entity such as the CCA being able to vouch with data analytics, et cetera, that this person is an up-and-up business, they're not diverting, everything we've tracked and traced is clean, then they have the assurances that they're not dealing with anything of a criminal nature.
I would think that would be more of recognition that they're playing by the rules.
Yeah,
and exactly. If they're playing by the rules, then those are the ones who could bank. And then as exactly. a byproduct of that, you're going to get more playing by the rules because now they don't have $10 million stuffed in the wall in their cabin.
Exactly, yeah. And that's always been my thought since we've started talking about this is, That also removes a huge security issue because obviously if your money's in the bank, it's a lot safer than it's, as you said, and stashed in your cabin or in a hole in the ground or wherever it is. You know, it's just really that will also, you know, hopefully the federal government will deregulate it, bring it down a notch. It's a Schedule One, which is what makes it such a difficult thing to deal with. But once that happens, of course, it'll be a lot easier. But in the interim, security is a big issue.
Well, thanks for coming by.
Thank
Happy
you,
Halloween.
Happy
now
Halloween.
See everybody tomorrow.